This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's morning show, Now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Let's head over to the movies, or in this case, it's AMI at the mini series. And before we speak to Amy Amanti about The Stand, let's have a listen to the trailer from the series that is currently streaming on Amazon.
While a city burns, a headline reads, "Is this the end?"
I'm scared.
Me too.
Where will we go?
Based on the book by Stephen King.
Welcome to the Boulder Free Zone.
Stu Redman.
Which one of you is Larry Underwood?
How do you know who I am?
How do you think?
Mother Abigail?
All I know is that we dreamed of her and she was real.
She brought us all together. Keep us safe in these uncertain times.
A woman wanders a cornfield.
I am in the way of knowing things.
I know you feel him.
A man stalks her.
Calls himself the Dark Man. But mostly I just see his wolf.
A wolf faces off with a mysterious old woman.
Mother Abigail told us that there are two sides. There's the good. And then there's a deep well of darkness.
So that's a bit of the trailer for the series The Stand, which was originally produced by Paramount Plus, but is now streaming in Canada on Amazon. Amy Amanti is a film reviewer who joins us from Vancouver, British Columbia. She's also the host of Accessing Art with Amy, an AMI audio podcast, which you can find by punching into your search bar, Accessing Art with Amy. Hey, Amy, good morning. How are you?
Happy Monday, Dave. Thanks for the plug.
You know, we do what we can. You do good work and therefore deserve good plugs. If you did bad work, plug you anyway. No, I'm just kidding. I would definitely not give you as much flowery language. Hey, Amy, before we get into some of the specifics here, what's the Stand about?
Oh, gosh. Here's some short foreshadowing. What's it not about? There's a lot going on this in this particular miniseries. In this particular trailer, actually the trailer is much more engaging than the miniseries is, to be honest.
Oh my gosh.
But it is, they focus a lot on talking about sort of the classic dichotomy of good versus evil. But it takes place, the backdrop of it takes place in America, present day, in the midst of an apocalypse. And the apocalypse happens to be a leak of a strain of influenza that they're referring to as Captain Trips that gets released from a military base kind of accidentally. So it's a man-made virus and kills off like 90% of the population. Mm. So then you've got 10% of the population amongst the backdrop of an apocalypse dealing with this dichotomy of good versus evil.
Yeah, that's a lot, and I think it might, as Michelle McQuigg was saying a little bit earlier in the hour, might be a little bit too intense in modern backdrop right here. But would you describe it more as a horror or a thriller or something else? You said there's a lot going on here.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure that this is one of those films that's classically genreable between horror and thriller. It's got some elements of both to it. I would say it's probably more of a thriller than a horror if you had to hold me down to one of those two genres.
Mm-hmm. Who's in the cast?
Okay, so you know the cast has a lot of folks, a lot of names in it that we'll likely recognize. And true to some miniseries, you know, you get some big names and then they're only in it for one episode and you're like, what? Why? Right? So we've got Alexander Skarsgård, who most people maybe remember from some vampire series that were pretty popular. True Blood. Okay. So Alexander Skarsgård, he plays Flag, who is our dark man that they alluded to. Whoopi Goldberg, who most people will know maybe from The View as of recent, but she is our mother Abigail, who is, I guess, the good end of the evil.
Okay.
Nobody's classifying these people as really God or the devil. So I'm trying not to do the same thing, but I lack the language around that, okay, to be honest with you. And then you've got some notable like guest stars that pop in and out. Greg Kinnear, Heather Graham. James Marsden is our Stu character who was in the trailer. And he's sort of around since episode one through to the end. And Odessa Young, who plays Franny, also from the beginning to the end of the series. So those are kind of our two main constants. And then you've got these kind of notable names that kind of pop in and out of the series.
Amy, more and more we're looking at diversity in casting. How does this particular series hold up in that regard?
Well, one of the things that I thought was interesting about this particular series, and I will tell you that the showrunners of this teleplay or miniseries are extremely proud of this. I don't know that it's much to toot their horns about, but how they had taken the original characters from the 1978 novel and, in their words, updated these characters. And so some of the prominent characters who were once are now either female characters, female Indigenous characters, or persons of color characters. Mm. And so, you know, they're tooting their horns on that. And they wanted to, I get their reasoning for updating it was because they wanted this story to be reflective of what a 2019, 2020 America would look like.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm all for that. But I have not read the book. So whether or not it sort of achieves the same thing in terms of character structure, I couldn't tell you. But, you know, it's not necessarily a miss in this particular.
Yeah, I mean, we always talk about the importance of inclusion, right? And showing a better representation that cuts across a wider swath. But it's not really necessarily up to the creators to pat themselves on the back for it. It's up to people to actually give them that praise, right? Like, they shouldn't be the ones out there being like, we are so inclusive. It's like, we'll decide that.
And I hate to say this out loud, but some of these characters were updated by Stephen King's son, who was writing some of these pieces. So, you know, you're having these characters of representation written by white people.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
So again, you're like, okay, so you've got part of it, but not all of it, you know?
Speaking of representation, there was some outcry from individuals who are deaf or hard of hearing. Can you explain why?
Okay, so we've got a character named Nick, who was updated from a white character. In fact, I think played by Rob Lowe in the 1994 miniseries version. And Nick is sort of the right-hand man to God, so to speak. Nick happens to be deaf and mute. That is their language, not my language. So I would no longer use the term mute, but they are still using that term for this particular character. So I think that's one of the reasons why it's an upcry. The other reason is that the actor, as you know, I'm not unfamiliar with, is not a deaf actor. And this particular role, for me, is really problematic for a lot of reasons. One, it's not cast authentically. But two, you know, because this character, when this character is in the presence of God, they can, quote, hear Whoopi Goldberg's character, Mother Abigail. So there's no need for ASL. You know, the disability is spontaneously cured because you're in the presence of God. And that sort of was icky for me. And then, of course, the usage of sign language here is so disgustingly represented. And I use that term purposely because it's like somebody took their fingers and just flicked them and they're pretending that's sign language.
Mm.
You know, there was no real forethought around that. And so and then it was, you know, spontaneously, you actually have characters that read sign language. And so how they interpret it. And so, you know, you just sort of as a viewer are supposed to consider that's happening, even though you're not seeing it, mm-hmm. you know? So there's lots of things that were problematic with that particular character.
And again, that speaks to when the show creators and showrunners start touting how good they did at inclusion, and then they failed at that level of inclusion. And you say to yourself, guys, this is why you don't get to pat yourself on the back in regard to these things. What about other disability representation in the series? Anything else of note?
Yeah, so thank you, Dave, because it's really important to me, because I think that there's a lot of what I would refer to as systemic ableism here. And again, like, systemic ableism is not necessarily, a lot of it is that people don't know what they don't know, but they have a character that in the book was classified as the R word that we don't use anymore, that rhymes with started. They still use that word in this particular series in 2020, and I think that it's redundant and no longer needs to be reflective. But they have a character named Tom who is defined as having a developmentally a developmental disability. And he repeats the same sentence over and over. My name's Tom. I'm 42 years old. I have a developmental disability. Please excuse my social interaction as I don't know how to interact with people. And he repeats this over and over and over. If you're looking to hire me, I cannot read. And it's like, oh my goodness. So the tropes and the stereotypes around this character that they're again also referring to as a man child, a gentle giant, a man child, and then they send this individual out into the world to face the air quotes dark one, and create a hero complex out of him. You know, the man, okay, can the man that can't read really get this job done? You know, so anyways, they surround this whole character by tropes. And it's really quite disheartening to listen to and to watch. It just, my icky bug was up through this whole.
So as we continue down this pathway, how was the audio description?
You know, I actually found the audio description to be problematic, not because of language, but because of the complexity of the storytelling. So these characters, which are porked in general, and you have a mixture of pandemic versus good versus evil. And unfortunately, what the description does is the class describe what you see. And I'll tell you why this is problematic. Because describe what you see is exactly that. So, you know, if this character who is the trickster, the dark one, he's got a mysterious quality to him where he sort of appears in one place and then appears in another place and then appears in another place. And so he sort of is always looming in the background. But you can't really tell that's supposed to be mysterious because the storytelling nature of the piece jumps around a lot. And so it's really difficult. A sighted person, you know, my mother watched this, and from a sighted perspective, you kind of clue into that mysterious factor. But when you're listening to the audio description, you can't tell whether this character is mysterious or just a character you haven't learned about yet. And they often refer to him, again, he doesn't have a name for a long time, as the man with the boots or the denim man or the blonde haired man. And it's like, well, which one is he?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you referred to him now by three different names. And so there wasn't enough continuity there for me and not enough handholding around the fact that when the audio description tells me he's in one place 10 seconds before he's in another place, that's a mystery, like he's mysteriously ordered himself from the side of the road to the back seat of your car. Which is because otherwise the way that the linear way that the show is sort of cut, you know, is one of those shows where you're seeing one scene and then all of a sudden you're transported to 5 months later. And so it's like somebody who wasn't pregnant in the scene earlier and you're just supposed to go, oh yeah, okay, they've just fast forwarded us a bit. So I don't know that the guy that's hitchhiking on the side of the road and then magically appears in the back of your car, they didn't actually stop and let him into the car because telling is kind of, you know, kind of cut and paste that way. So it was hard for me to follow. And I thought about watching it a second and then I went, you know what? Not worth it.
Right. So along those lines, and Amy, just as your Skype looks like it's about to give up on you today, I get the impression you didn't like it, but let's put a number on it. Out of 10, how do you rate the series?
I gave it a 4. Oof. I don't think it's really worth your time. The trailer is much more interesting to me than anything else. I don't know that the book is any better. And just so y'all know where I stand on the book versus the movie, they're two completely different genres. You can't compare the two to each other. It's like saying, do you prefer the stage play or the visual artwork? You can't compare the two.
So instead of answering the
Daily Shawshank Redemption was a much better movie than it was a book.
So
almost verbatim the same.
So instead of answering the Daily Poll, you're punting the Daily Poll away, saying, don't even bother going
it back at you for review.
Don't even go to @AMIAudio on Twitter or Accessible Media Inc. on Facebook to answer our Twitter poll, our Daily Poll. That's what Amy says. Amy, always fun catching up with you. Have yourself a great day, and we'll talk to you again next week.
You got it. I'll be here.
You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.